knows in this matter. Your Honors, this is an issue where I have noted three assignments of error, but a lot of them all stem back to that same totality of the circumstances argument that was put forth by the local department at the administrative hearing level, and whether or not a finding of physical neglect inadequate shelter can in fact be supported by a totality of the circumstances citation, or whether or not the local department has a requirement to present evidence that shows what an environmental hazard is in the home and how that environmental hazard poses a risk of injury or harm to the child. And it's my position that in this case, that did not occur, that the local department created this totality of the circumstances argument, put that forth to the administrative hearing officer. She then adopted that argument, and that led to a finding against Mr. Mills. It also led to the rather interesting situation where you have two biological parents living in the home. The issue is the home. The issue is only how the shelter is set up and what the parent is doing. And the parents walked out of the administrative hearings with two different level findings against them. Mr. Mills walked out with a level 3, which is minimal harm, and Ms. Mills walked out with level 2, which is the moderate
harm. Well, we see co-defendants all the time get juries give them different sentences for the same offense. Is that in and of itself error?
It is error when you are talking about these sorts of administrative hearings, and I would also say it's only error when you're talking about the inadequate shelter, because it wasn't a situation where one parent was engaging in behavior and the other parent was engaging in different behavior. It was truly just about the state of the home.
But we don't have the record from the mother's proceeding.
Correct, Your Honor, and this was simply something that is accepted and acknowledged as true, but as you know, when the trial court is reviewing the agency record, they're limited to the facts that are on the record. These are not facts.
But you just said that the mother's was the stronger finding.
Yes, that is
your
correct.
Your client's was less.
Yes, that is correct.
So if we send it back, does DSS elevate the finding to match that of the mother?
No, I don't believe that's what should occur. I think what should occur, the court has the ability to simply change the finding themselves. The trial court has the authority to do that or remand it back to the hearing as they should choose.
But I get back to my first point. Different triers of fact often make different findings, and that's what's happened here. And if are we to say that any time different triers of fact reach different conclusions, that the lesser of those findings has to be binding?
No, Your Honor. What I'm presenting to the court today is that if the administrative hearing officer and the trial court would have utilized the correct standard to find whether or not physical neglect and adequate shelter existed, as opposed to the totality of the circumstances, this kind of situation wouldn't exist. Where the hearing officers...
But one parent could be more culpable than another parent.
Yes, absolutely. But not in a situation where you have an adequate shelter unless you have a premise where the mom has more of an obligation to clean the house than the father does.
Like the mom is the hoarder who won't throw things away, and I mean, the record as we have it could arguably suggest more culpability on the part of the mother, particularly in light of the father's explanations.
Yes, but for a difference between level 3 and level 2, it's about the harm to the child, and the harm to the child comes solely from the status of the home. Whether or not that home posed moderate harm to the child, or whether that home posed minimal harm to the child.
I understand your argument on that, but I mean, your client had an office that was rather meticulously organized and clean, but the house was really not just a hoarding situation, but just enormous problems with feces, urine, human and animal, and all sorts of issues. So, his response was, well, you know, all these things around here, my wife gets very upset if we throw anything away. She's very stubborn about that. So I guess I'm trying to understand your argument as to why wife wouldn't be more culpable, and also she's not your client, right?
Correct, yes. Make that very clear. She is not my client. Different hearing officers, different situations. I think my concern is that if you utilize the objective standard where the local department would have had to come in and say, here's the environmental hazard that's in the home, here is the risk of injury to the child, you would never have had a situation where Mr. Mills' hearing officer says, there is no evidence of moderate harm to the child in this house. therefore I'm modifying it to a level 3.
Didn't DSS do that? DSS presented medical evidence to establish that there was a that the child's health or safety was endangered.
DSS submitted the transcript of the pediatrician who was called by the mother's attorney at the underlying juvenile court. He was called for the purpose of supporting the fact there was no respiratory illness. There was no signs that he was living in a home that was a danger to his health.
But didn't he provide evidence from which the hearing officer concluded that the child's health or safety was endangered?
Yes, the hearing officer concluded, he said, it looked messy, it looks like, I don't know what's in these boxes, it looks as though this could be, some harm could have come to IM as a result of this. On cross-examination, he did say that.
So why doesn't that support the hearing officer's conclusion that the housing situation, the shelter, endangered the child's health and safety?
My concern with the hearing officer's decision backs up two steps before that, based on she also adopted this totality of the circumstances argument that the doctor was never in the home. The doctor only saw pictures of the home. It's the local department who had the social worker there at the administrative hearing to say, where's the fire hazard? Where's the ingress? Where's the egress issue? Where's the harm to the child? And that she was not able to do that.
You know, it seems to me that although you didn't state it, you're effectively, and I'm not sure we can even consider this, but your complaint is that there is not a definition to that encompasses shelter that would endanger the child's health or safety. Is that sum and substance of what, that there must be some specific instances of what would do that, what would cause that risk?
No, I think that is impossible in these cases because I think it is such a fluid situation when you have the Child Protective Services become involved. My concern is that I think it is defined. I think that you do look to the intake tool and the manual and the administrative code.
But those aren't regulations. Those are just suggestions that DSS makes to its caseworkers. Look
yes,
to this, look to that. The hearing officer and ultimately this court is bound by what's in the regulation.
Yes, and so when you look to the administrative code as far as what the definition is, and then the hearing officer does also look to the manual as well for the expansion of the different types of physical neglect, I think that those definitions are in there. My concern is that I don't think the local department met those. I don't think the local department provided that information to the administrative hearing officer by saying this particular environmental hazard posed this particular harm to the child, and that when pressed, they were not able to prove that.
But you have to look to the totality of the circumstances of any scenario to determine if the environmental hazards, plural, present a problem. In other words, there may be a single reason that there's the potential harm, or there might be multiple reasons when taken together create the situation.
Yes, and with the trial court, there was some discussion about that, where you could have a leaky pipe next to an exposed wire next to a child's bed. You would obviously look, you know, the leaky pipe and everything else taken separately might not be a situation, but if you take it together, you can clearly pinpoint there's a risk of to the child. And that's not something they were able to do. The social worker said he's not able to run around in the living room. He might trip on something. He might fall on something. There are environmental hazards in every home. And so I think for this, it's important for it to be significant and to be able to pinpoint
But
that.
Isn't your argument that, wouldn't your argument require that the caseworker testify to the ultimate issue, whether there in fact was a risk of or endangerment of health or safety?
During the administrative hearing?
Yes.
Yes.
But we don't allow witnesses to provide necessarily opinions or testimony on the ultimate fact and issue. We leave that up to the trier of fact.
In these situations, because we are appealing the social worker's opinion, essentially, to the administrative hearing officer, they do get into, this is why I made this decision, this is why it was my opinion that it was neglectful. This is what supports the opinion that I initially made.
But for us, you're appealing the circuit court's decision.
Yes.
And the standard is, as a whole, shows that the facts are more probable and credible than not.
Yes. If you get into...
So how does that not require a look at all of the facts?
I'm not appealing based on whether there are sufficient facts necessarily in the record, because the standard for that is very high and difficult to overcome. My concern is that those substantial facts to meet the definition were never put forth at the administrative hearing level, because they never made that nexus. So there are some cases...
Wait a minute. Say that again. They never made what nexus?
The nexus between here's the environmental hazard and here's the risk of harm that it posed specifically to IM, so that you can trace back to how this parent was neglectful.
But doesn't that go back to Judge Petty's point that you... I mean, the facts are in evidence, and it's up to the trier of fact to make that ultimate determination.
Yes, but in my first...
You'd be arguing that it would be inappropriate for social services to testify to the ultimate issue. Instead, they testify to what they've observed. And then you get the doctor that testifies, or the record that shows the doctor's report of the other pieces.
I believe that the social workers do have to testify to that risk. Same as many other findings in the code, you have to have the two prongs. You have to have, for example, a social worker who can testify or present evidence about in sexual abuse, the touching as well as the gratification. In physical abuse, the injury as well as the fact it was not accidental. So all of these factors, and I see that I'm getting into my rebuttal time, but all these factors do, I think, have to be presented so that you don't have a situation where you have today, which is unusual, that the local department says the father is caring and loving. The local department says there's no evidence this was intentional behavior. It's a one-time situation that I don't believe rose to the level of physical neglect.
But isn't that why he got level 3?
He received level 3 simply because the administrative hearing officer, looking at the environmental hazards such as there were in the home, said none of these can pose a moderate harm to the child. It is only at minimal. Level. Yes. But I don't. I think you can be loving and caring, and you could. The home could still have presented. Could have been bad enough that you could have had environmental hazards enough to do that. But in this particular situation, that's not what was presented to the hearing officer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Ellen Fulmer with the Attorney General's Office, here today representing the Virginia Department of Social Services. As an appeal under the Administrative Process Act, the burden is on Mr. Mills to demonstrate an error of law made by the Circuit Court in reviewing the evidence and in upholding the decision of the hearing officer in this matter. This court must review the evidence in the light most favorable to the department and limit its review of the issues of fact to the agency record.
Is it an error of law to fail to identify the actual risk of harm to the child?
I don't believe that it is, Judge. And in fact, there's no requirement in the law or in regulation. And further, it really makes no sense in a situation of an inadequate shelter to require the department to identify single circumstances and then have to identify with each one of those circumstances the specific harm that it poses. In fact, the assessment tool that's relied upon by Mr. Mills clearly states that the list of factors provided therein are merely examples of conditions that could be determined to present hazards or to be deemed hazardous. It does not require that if multiple conditions exist at once that they can't be considered together. And as Judge Decker points out, DSS is required to look at an entire home, an entire circumstance to determine whether or not a neglectful situation exists. In this case, the record is replete with evidence regarding the amount of trash, boxes, clothing, toys, and other items piled around the house. The social worker did testify about her concerns for egress and ingress into and out of the house and the safety factors of the items that she couldn't necessarily identify and that they could pose. Additionally, in the record is contained Dr. Farber's testimony from the adjudicatory hearing in juvenile court, in which he does state that looking at the photographs from the home, he would deem it to be hazardous to a child. He specifically says the child could pull something down on himself, he could trip and hurt himself, and he can't identify their possible access to dangerous substances that a child in that situation.
The latter was what the department was sort of hanging its hat on, and that is, when I say the latter, it was the, you open the refrigerator door, there's a horrible smell, so if the food is eaten, presumably it makes someone very ill. The cat and dog feces, as well as even human feces, found in places. Mm-hmm. Not so much, there's a lot of stuff there. Because there are a lot of people that hoard. And so if you know, everybody who's a hoarder thinks that they may next receive one of these decisions, if they have children in the house, that could affect a lot of people. So could you clarify, is this because of the hoarding, because they could pull something down on themselves or trip, or is it because of other hazardous things that are on top of or mixed in with the hoarding?
Well, I think we look to the hearing officer's determination, and she considered all of those factors. I think there is a consideration in her opinion about it, not so much the amount of stuff, if you will, that's in the home, but that there were questions as to whether or not it blocked ingress and egress. There was a significant discussion in her opinion as to the odor in the home, and also the spoiled food odor, the odor from pet feces, the odor from pet urine, and the potential impact that that could have. And that's supported by Dr. Farber's testimony that it could present a risk of respiratory illness, and that in fact the child had been treated for such.
What's the impact of the ADHD and the fact that this child has had violent fits in the past and has a tendency to violence?
Well, I think that is something that the hearing officer also appropriately considered. Given this specific child, the conditions that this specific child deals with, it is perhaps then incumbent upon parents to make sure that this child isn't in a position where perhaps in one of his violent episodes or just overactive episodes couldn't bump into a pile of things and have them fall on top of him.
So do the regs and the case law support looking at the individual child and the possible medical issues associated with an individual child versus...
They don't specifically say the department must consider this child's medical treatment.
That's just a factor in this record.
It is a factor in this record, and it is a factor that I believe local departments consider when they're called out to investigate a situation such as this. Mr. Mills also argues that the circuit court should have considered the findings of a different hearing officer in a different administrative hearing. And I want to make that clear that Mrs. Mills did have a completely separate administrative hearing. However, the arguments and evidence presented in Mrs. Mills' hearing are appeals outside the facts of the agency record. Had the circuit court considered those factors, they would have been in contradiction to the rules established by this court that only the factors in the agency record can be considered. Under the Virginia Administrative Process Act, hearing officers are tasked with being independent, objective triers of fact. Like judges, they're required to analyze the evidence presented to them with no consideration to evidence that may or may not have been presented in other cases. This court has held that in the context of child protective services, the interpretations that those administrative agencies give must be accorded great deference. The Virginia Department of Social Services believes that for those reasons, that after reviewing the evidence in the agency record and hearing the oral arguments on these issues, the circuit court correctly concluded the evidence in this case is more than sufficient under the substantial evidence standard, and that a reasonable mind would not necessarily have come to a different conclusion. And therefore, we're asking that the circuit court's findings be upheld. Thank you.
Just to clarify, Ms. DeVete, the child was never removed from the home during any of this period, was he?
He did have to go stay with his grandmother until the home could be cleaned, and a protective order was entered in the juvenile court.
But the child was, once the home was cleaned, the child was returned.
Yes, there was no removal order. Yes.
What is the result of this action? Is there a a finding of neglect that's included on an agency registry?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. It lasts for 3 years for Mr. Mills. Mr. Mills, as you saw from the record, is a music teacher. So for some people, for me, for example, I don't know that it would really make an impact on my life if I had an administrative finding. If I'm trying to teach children, and this is on my record, I cannot do that. I can never be a teacher in the Commonwealth of Virginia. If any, you know, Bach to Rock or music school runs my record, I cannot be employed by them. So it becomes a very significant issue, aside from the parenting issue. It's a significant employment issue, and that's why I believe that you should have very strict standards when you're going to make this kind of determination against a parent.
Counsel, let me ask you something somewhat related to this issue, but this record was sealed below.
Yes.
There has been no motion on either side to seal it on appeal. Obviously, we need to issue some sort of an opinion that's going to expose certain things that are necessary for the determination of the appeal. But I just want to make sure you have not filed anything to seal it.
We have not, Your Honor. I was under the impression that it was sealed at the Court of Appeals level, but I know counsel and I have spoken about speaking only in terms of initials with a child as well as with the parents, so that the record, the opinion certainly will still be out there, but that the...
We can conceal a child. We can't conceal the appellant, name of the appellant. I mean, do you agree with that? I guess that was a question.
I was thinking of it. The MH versus Department of Social Services case, where she is referred, I believe she was referred to by initials in that case, but I could be completely wrong on that. But certainly the child has always been referred to by initials for that.
And that will, that we're able to do, but some of the facts necessary for the determination will have to be exposed.
And presumably the style of the case remains what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So, you haven't asked the appellant's name be initials instead.
Correct.
All right. Thank you for your argument. We will greet counsel and then take up.